Remaker's Mark, Episode 24, Supergirl. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we have part two of episode 24, where we are again discussing Supergirl. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight? And what superpower would you want to have if you could have one?
Jawohl! My superpower would be to find a comfortable place to sit no matter where I was.
Wow. That's the laziest superpower I've ever heard.
But man, think about how many times it would come in handy. You're like, I just really need a comfortable place to sit right now. Done.
So
you always
wait,
be comfortable and you would love it.
So you can yes. generate comfy seating, or you can adapt any situation that you are in to find comfy seating. Like, do you just like,
I haven't really fleshed it out yet, but I like Jerry's comment about airplanes, because I'm 6'4" and most of me is legs, and sitting in an airplane is pretty much my idea of hell. So that superpower right then and there, boom, pays for itself.
All right.
If you can generate comfort for other people as well, I would consider it truly heroic.
Mm, nice.
Mark, for you, I'll do it. For you.
For you, the world.
Oh, shucks.
So if he only used his power for himself, would he be a supervillain?
Wow.
Man. A really comfortable really supervillain.
I think he'd just kind of be a jerk.
Lounging in beanbag chairs.
He'd have a snifter in one hand.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that does make me a supervillain.
He would just be like an expert negotiator. He would set up every environment in the most uncomfortable way. And then he would just sit down and be like, I'm just going to wait this out until you guys decide to do what you're going to do. And
I'm good, guys. I can just sit here.
I am so comfortable.
How are those Swedish designer ergonomic chairs? Suckers.
Awesome. Jeremy Nielsen, how are you tonight? And what superpower would you want to have that is not involving comfort?
I'm good. And the first thing that comes to mind would be a teleportation power of some kind, where I could teleport to any place that I can think of in a blink of an eye.
Nice. That's a classic. That's a good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a tough
one
not to
creative,
pick.
But that's more useful.
Yeah, totally. And that's what we're looking for. Lee Hyperspeed, how are you tonight? And what superpower would you want to have?
I'm good, and I guess telekinetic powers, similar to the Force.
Mm. So being able to manipulate things and people with your mind?
Well, to move stuff around.
So you could move me in my comfortable chair wherever I needed to go.
Yeah, I suppose.
Lee, just keep moving the chair. Unstoppable team.
You'll try to sit down, and then he
Lee,
moves
I want a bagel.
Lee, pass me the remote.
Exactly.
Lee, I want a bagel.
Those two quotes sum up the unstoppable nature of this duo.
I love it. Nice. Mark Josting, how are you, and what superpower would you want to have?
I'm great, thank you. And I would have the ability to create solid constructs out of pure energy.
Wow. So just create solids with your mind?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, with my willpower.
Wow.
Interesting.
So Green Lantern, basically.
Boom. Got it.
And I should mention that I could make totally comfy chairs with that.
Well, okay, Mark. So Mark and Lee and myself. So Mark will create the thing. I'll make it comfy, and Lee will move it. We could really get into manufacturing here if you think about it.
And then I'll just appear out of nowhere and sit in it.
That sounds like the worst Wonder Twins movie ever.
No, the Wonder Twins are the worst Wonder Twins.
Wow. This has gone off the rails in the most amazing way. I don't even know what my superpower is now. Hi, everybody. I'm Kyle, and I'm confused about my superpower, because before I was going to say like flight or something, but now I'm realizing that I'm hanging out with
chairs.
The world's laziest group of superpowers, superheroes. I don't know what to do about it. I would rescind superpower. That would be my superpower, and I would take all of your superpowers away for ruining your perfectly good superpower abilities.
Buzzkill.
I know. That would be my name, Buzzkill.
You can open a beer with your mind.
Ooh. Like Kyle, just sit here in one of our
Captain
comfy chairs.
Party favor.
You'll be fine.
Lordy. Wow. That was impressive. Good work, gentlemen. Before we move on to our discussion of Supergirl, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places.
New from Modern Antics, Riddle Room. Riddle Room is a live puzzle game unlike anything you've ever experienced. 12 people are locked in the bunker, and they have 1 hour to solve a series of increasingly difficult challenges before the clock runs out. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. Now let's touch on some feedback that we got from listeners and fans regarding casting. So we threw out a question on Facebook and Twitter asking who they would recast as Supergirl in a modern remake today. Tony Levinskis said either Ellen Page or Emma Roberts. He also said lesser known but perfect for the part is Saoirse Ronan, who we've talked a lot about lately.
Yeah, I thought about her too.
Yeah, agreed. I just saw Grand Budapest Hotel over the weekend, and it was very good, and she was quite good in that. So nice. I highly recommend it. And then Andrew John Swanson, Jer on your page, I believe, said Amy Poehler as Supergirl, which... I don't know.
That's bizarre.
Can't quite get with that. I mean,
it would still be better.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It would still be better.
I'm wondering if that was a subconscious thing because on my request for information, I said, does anyone have Amy thoughts? And I misspelled any as Amy.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I see. So you'd led the conversation without trying.
Yes. Does anyone have any Amy thoughts? And he said, Amy Poehler.
Got it. I still think there's probably better Amy's out there, but I'll go with it. That's cool.
Amy Mann would be interesting.
Oh, that I'm behind. Hell yeah. Then on Twitter, Derek Shilley, who's responded many times, said, are you trying to make a good movie out of it or keep it cheesy? And I responded that we want to keep it like lighter in tone, but still a really good action movie, like more Iron Man than The Dark Knight, which is kind of how we described it when we talked about it together. He said, okay.
I disagree, but okay.
Yeah? All right.
We can do that later.
Yeah, indeed. So with that in mind, he said, okay, Elizabeth Banks, Taylor Schilling, or Tatiana Maslany. Tatiana would be especially good at the duality of super versus normal, and she's in Orphan Black, which I've not yet watched, but I've heard tremendous things about, and I'm very excited to do so.
I almost said her, but then, and this is horrible, I didn't want to waste her on this pick.
Ouch. Volumes. Yep. Yep.
But I did think of her, and she can do anything. It's astounding what she does in that show.
Awesome. I cannot wait to watch that. It's on, I think, Amazon Instant Streaming, so I just have to start watching it. It's always the hardest part is just starting it. Orphan Black.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's also on BBC America, if you happen to get that.
Cool. And then finally, his last tweet was also, holy blank, Peter O'Toole was in that. I think that's pretty much what Peter O'Toole had to say about it.
Maybe a slightly different tone.
Holy blank. I was in that? Yes.
I was Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence of Arabia, for crying out loud. Now I'm playing this.
Lawrence of Arabia. Arabia to Zaltar. He's covering the whole alphabet. And then Jen Shaw, who has participated in the This Is Yay podcast here with Mike Fotis, suggested in all caps, Judith Light, which I think is awesome.
For yep. Selena?
No, just matter? For Supergirl. Oh, Judith Light. Yep. I mean, I'm behind it. I'm down for that. And then Christopher Grapp, who has helped out with Nerd Nights, suggested Kate Mara 10 years ago. If current age is not a factor and based solely on ability, Allison Brie. So Lee's with you there. Nice.
Lovely.
And then Andy, you had one more that provided feedback as well. Do you want to mention that?
My friend Deb Cushion confessed that she capitalized, italicized, loved this movie when she was younger. But then she quickly admitted that she hadn't seen it since and was afraid to watch it again. And I thought that was very
rightly
wise.
So.
That was very wise of her. And she also suggested Emma Stone for Supergirl.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I think we've sort of overstoned. I don't know. I feel like we've suggested her a lot. So I think we're trying to shy away. But I think she would do a good job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Disagree, but that's, yeah. That's
yeah?
Yeah, I considered, you know, some of the younger actresses now, like Emma Stone and Ellen Page, and I was like, yeah, I don't think so.
But well, thanks for turning off our new fan to the podcast, Lee. That's nice of you.
Taking everyone down.
Good work. Deb, we appreciate your contribution.
Hear, hear.
I wish more of Hollywood had Deb's thought process and didn't watch old things and just left them alone.
Well, she supplemented the story by saying that her husband had wanted her to watch Goonies. I guess she'd never seen it as a child, and her husband was a big, huge fan of it, saying, it's such a great movie and such a great movie. And she watched it, I think, in her late 20s or something, and was kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
And I think that really, if we truly look back on a lot of those things with an objective eye, we'd come away with a lot of eh.
At probably.
Best. Yeah. That's hard. Yeah, we talked a little bit about that in Vacation. I know that we had some of that going on there. So
what is it in psychology? The safest memories are the ones you never access. Something like that. So you just never go back. Never go back.
Wow. Nice. Well put. Deep.
Thank you.
Surprisingly deep for a Supergirl discussion. I like it. All right. So now we're going to finish up the casting side of things with a summary of our previous episode's discussion and the big winners on that. So for the role of Ethan, originally played by Hart Bochner, we went with Jer's choice of Patrick Schwarzenegger. I don't think he talks like that, but I assume Yes, Patrick, that is good. So Jer, congrats on that. Well done. The role of Selena, originally played by Faye Dunaway, we went with Andy's choice of the Ice Queen Tilda Swinton, which is awesome. Andy, yes. Congrats for that. Well
thank
done.
Thank you.
In the role of Supergirl / Kara / Linda Lee, originally played by Helen Slater, we went with my choice of Karen Gillan. I broke the tiebreaker on that, and I am not ashamed to say I did so. And then in the minor characters, we went with Jer's choice of Ian McKellen for the role of Zaltar, originally played Sir by Ian Peter O'Toole. Pardon me, Sir Ian McKellen. You are correct. So, good stuff.
He didn't go to night school.
So, the big winner there, having won the minor character and one of the majors, was Jer. So, Jer, congrats. Well done. Wow. Proud of you.
I am going to put this feather on the tip of my cap. I won the Supergirl episode. Good
luck. And in our democratic alphabetic process here, wow, I just felt like an MC for the first time in my life. We're going to go with Mark, who... What are you picking, Mark? What's the next movie? What's up for us?
First of all, I'm going to totally kill your buzz by saying this is not at all democratic. It's just egalitarian.
It was my choice to do that. Boom. So therefore, it's democratic. I don't know. I thought I was Buzzkill. That's my superhero power, not yours, damn it.
Sorry.
I'm going to turn this call around.
I'll do something Green Lantern-ish, which is just off-putting, that's all.
Like the movie?
Oh...
Exactly so.
Thank you.
I'll preface this by saying that I think a lot of my film picks have been attempts to try to engage a female audience for this podcast, and this next pick will not at all be that. and we're going with the classic hockey film from the 70s, Slapshot.
Yes. Nice. That is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, putting on the foil.
I haven't seen that in a long time, so I'm excited to revisit that. All right, so that wraps up our summary of part one and where we're going to go in episode 25. But for now, we're going to continue to discuss the plot, tech, and filmmaking changes that we would make to Supergirl. So the first thing that we came away with in our discussion here, and pretty much everybody had something of some sort to say with it, which is that the villain in the original was pretty shoddy. We talked a little bit in part one about the performance of Faye Dunaway, about how scenery chewing it was, and just really wasn't a lot of bite to it, even with all the scenery chewing. So I think Lee and Mark have a lot to say about that. Lee, do you want to start us off here with what your thoughts are as far as what that could be? And then Mark, I think you've got some really kind of deep dives into the DC Universe side of things too. So want to start us off, Lee?
Sure. Well, I did rewatch this movie in preparation for this several times. And I just found myself being completely bored with all the scenes with Selena and Nigel and Bianca, and I all but fell asleep during those scenes. And I just realized that, oh, this is why this movie is so terrible. It's because of the villain. So I'm going to go on record and say this is probably the worst movie villain of all time.
Wow.
I don't know. Yeah, it's
bold.
And bad as in bad for the movie, not a bad character, I guess. I don't know. But I think in a remake, we would have to find a better villain, someone who's a lot more menacing, someone like the Kryptonian villains in Superman 2, because they had the same powers as Superman, something similar to that. But witchcraft is just not interesting to me. I guess.
Hey, she can light a cigarette with her finger. That's pretty cool.
And then she like levitate somebody at a party.
Yeah, that was shortly after the incident.
Yeah, that scene should have been cut. But yeah, anything having to do with Selena in this movie was just awful, god awful. So I would want to see a much better villain who's sort of on the same level as Supergirl in terms of what she can do. I think that having someone similar to, I read a comic book that had some sort of being from Krypton that was created by Kryptonian scientists to be warriors that sort of went on their own way and started to be, I guess they started to wreak havoc on Krypton, and they're all along the same lines of having the same powers as Supergirl. So I thought that was interesting. I guess I would want to see something like that in a villain. So yeah, I don't know. Mark, I know that you had plenty to say about Selena as well.
Yeah, I totally agree that that the 1984 version of Selena was really ineffective. But I disagree that that we have to do away with her. I think she could be a much, much better villain. We just need to do away with we need to do away with Bianca or totally change her.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. All the levity that was attempted in the original version it just detracted from the weight of the story. And if the film treated the Selena experience much more seriously, I would buy it, I think. But Lee, I'm glad that you mentioned the having Kryptonian villains, because I think that's a possibility too. If we want to totally change the story of the Supergirl film, and DC has a lot of really, really good stories about Supergirl and Superman, and one that I think is really intriguing is where the super, super bad guy of the DC universe, Darkseid, actually takes control of Superman, brainwashes him, that sort of thing, because that's one of the things that that Darkseid does. And so with Superman now a bad guy who's responsible, who can take him on, well, that kind of leaves Supergirl as the most powerful person in the DC universe. Well, most powerful hero, which is an intimidating thought.
Mm-hmm.
If the first bad guy is actually Superman, wow.
That would be really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And this also has a built-in sequel, because in the story, you know, Supergirl is, at the end of it, you know, she actually does defeat Superman and, you know, releases him from Darkseid's control, but then, you know, having just fought with Superman, she needs medical attention. And well, the doctor that cares for her actually takes a sample of her DNA and creates a clone. Well, that clone her name is Galatea, and they do some work on this clone to, like, age her artificially to peak physical condition. They train her. So effectively, she's Supergirl, but better. Except that she's an enemy of the Justice League, and that's bad for them.
Interesting.
I think, Lee, you and I are on the same page there, where it could be a much more compelling story. Yeah, I guess if the struggle was more on equal terms in terms of, like, abilities and what they're actually trying to do, which is just, you know, beat each other down.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. You know, I'd like to come back to Selena just a little bit. I think, you know, if we choose to keep Selena as a villain, which I think is an okay choice. I mean, I think that, you know, we did cast it that way. So let's say we do go that route. Mark, I love those ideas. Now, are those both existing storylines in the sort of Supergirl canon? Are those have been told? So we've got some source material there.
Indeed, those stories do exist in comics and in film. The Warner Brothers Justice League series goes into at least the Galatea story.
Okay, gotcha.
And everybody should watch that series. It's awesome.
Cool.
I think that Selena doesn't necessarily need to be abandoned. Like, I would want her to be much more serious, much darker, much more just about, like, the ambition and trying to, like, hijack Nigel's position in their wizarding world, I guess.
Yeah.
Of Hogwarts.
yeah, to me...
And, Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, to me, the change that I would make is basically it just takes so long for Selena to become anything other than just kind of wacky. And a lot of that is the situation around her, and like that party scene that you talked about again was super weird. And, like, you know, everything around here just didn't do anything to make her to show her strengths as what would be a villain. Towards the end, I mean, that the end scene, kind of the final scene, was silly, mostly because it was a 1980s action movie, but, you know, it had its moments. It was daunting, and it was, you know, I would say that's where she should be halfway through the movie. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they just took so long to demonstrate that she's bad. You know, they tried to set it up at the beginning that she's got some sort of otherworldly aspects, and I would say the moment that she gets the... It's not the dodecahedron. What is it? Omegahedron.
The omegahedrons.
The moment she gets the omegahedron, the monkey ball, yes. that it's an immediate change that you can, maybe it's even like a physical change. Like I'm thinking Sigourney Weaver in Ghostbusters when she has the run-in with the gargoyle, and the next thing you see, she's in that like orange dress and her hair's all up and just looks kind of like Bride of Frankenstein-y, like something that's like a physical change to show like, okay, something happened here. It's not natural. Something like that. So if we want to keep Selena around, that would be my suggestion for that.
Mark, Selena, I you know more about this than me, but in my perusals of the internets, I did not see Selena as a canonical villain of Supergirl. Does she exist in the comics at all?
I found no evidence that she has any basis in the comics.
I haven't either. I think she was completely fabricated for the movie.
Yeah, I think interesting. So, which I think was a really poor choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, especially with as many good villains as there are in the DC universe, and as many good villains as there appear to be in the Supergirl stories of the DC universe, why go outside of that and make up somebody weird and boring?
Yeah, it seems like I would think that the only reason to do that would be to, you know, not disrupt the canon. But you're doing that anyway just by using Supergirl. And they also did her backstory pretty faithfully, too. So I don't know why you would do that. And if you want to use magic, cool. I mean, there are plenty of DC characters that are totally badass sorcerers. I don't know why you would just make up a different one and then make it really lame.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was if there were any Supergirl comics prior to this movie.
Oh, totally. She goes back to like late 1960s.
Okay.
Yeah, I would give them a small benefit of the doubt in that comic book movies in the 1980s were, I mean, a fraction of the success that they are now. Now, sure. Like blockbuster movies are comic book movies or, you know, essentially, or are superhero movies for the most part. Back then, that was not the case at all. So I could see them trying to distance from the comic because, you know, attempts had been made to make comic book movies and they were not at all successful. They just were not... You know, they weren't franchises. They didn't catch on. They were pretty bad. So I could, you know, give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and say they distance themselves from that for that reason. But I agree with everything that you said as far as the kind of the weakness of the character.
Yeah, it's a good point, Kyle. That even Marvel tried Spider-Man and Captain America a couple of times before finally finding some good stuff.
Yep, indeed. All right, so the next point that we talked about was the aspect that this is a female lead character, a female superhero, and female empowerment is a big aspect to kind of what we would like the role to bring to this world. I said no pressure, but the world seems to be dying for a female superhero, but if we F this up, it could very well do what the original Supergirl did, which is doom female superhero leads for years or decades to come. That being said, I think we can do this. So we've got a lot of responsibility here, but I think it's something that can be done successfully. And I think we've set ourselves up very ably to do that. But, you know, I think that there's been discussion of late about having a Wonder Woman movie. And I think Wonder Woman is going to be in Batman v Superman coming up, the Zack Snyder version. So we'll see what comes of that. But, you know, as part of that discussion, it came out that, you know, a lot of people are really interested in a Wonder Woman movie, especially women who are film goers. I mean, they make up 50% of ticket sales or more. And they're willing to pay and see female led movies. And, you know, that's being proven again and again. But there's not a lot of female superheroes. And I think that, you know, studios are really doing a poor job of representing a huge part of the population in that regard. We thought about some successful sort of superhero movies, if you will, and some not successful ones that were female-led. The successful one that we came up with, and this isn't a traditional superhero by any means, but Kill Bill, the two Kill Bill movies were very successful. You know, their budget wasn't giant, but I think they did very well money-wise, and I think, you know, in terms of the perception and how they were regarded, it was very highly regarded. And that was kind of about it. I couldn't think of any other, female-led superhero movies that were hugely successful or highly regarded. The two that we thought of that had some attention but were pretty poorly received were Catwoman with Halle Berry and Elektra with Jennifer Garner. And that one was, you know, that was okay, but it wasn't good. The Elektra character in the Daredevil movie was better than I think than the Elektra movie, but still, it was not great. So, I mean, I think we have an opportunity here to make a female-led superhero movie that kicks as much ass as the male-led ones, because there's no reason for it not to. You know, there's no reason to have a lower budget. There's no reason to do anything less than the best for that. So I think we have to take that responsibility on strongly and do our best for that. Lee, you had some points about the original as far as kind of Superman's presence in that ties into that. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Christopher Reeve was originally supposed to make a cameo appearance as Superman, but he had to back out. I don't know what that would have looked like or how long he would have been in the movie, but I thought it might have been interesting to see that, but they explained it away with one little strip of radio dialogue. Yeah. Which, by the way, you know, what did they say, like 10,000 or what?
Light years.
100 million light 100
million
years.
Light years.
100 million light years away, which... You know, I'm not an expert on Einstein's theory of relativity, but I think when he comes back, nobody he knows will be alive.
Yep. And possibly not even the Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
He packed an overnight bag.
Yeah.
He's got his toothbrush.
But I'm just wondering, you know, is it better to include him? You know, going back to our first point on one of Mark's ideas that pays homage to the comic books, you know, I don't know. Maybe we do include him, but he is a secondary character and not the main character.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't, you know, save her.
Yeah.
You know, if he's not the hero at the end of the day, then cool.
Right, exactly. That's, I don't know. If we were to include Superman in a remake, I would want him to be in a supporting role.
Or a villain role, potentially.
Yeah, that would be cool, too.
Well, I think a lot of the superhero movies that are, especially the Marvel Studios, but now DC is getting in on the game too, there's a lot of that sort of crossover stories. As movies are getting made for each character, they're trying to maintain that larger universe idea, and the main way to do that is to be in each other's movies a lot of times. So it wouldn't be surprising in this culture of superhero movies for him to show up, do something and then leave, or, you know, show up and help out and then, you know, be a supporting character.
Yeah, even if they establish some of the origin stuff, I don't know, and Mark will defer to you again on this, but in the origin stories in the source material, did they know each other? I mean, they're cousins, but I mean, like, did they hang out as kids? I mean, is there any contact there? I mean, could that help establish the Supergirl character as far as her skills? I mean, that could, you know, set up some legitimacy in terms of how badass she is if you see her sort of like sparring with him as kids and not giving him any inches, you know, really just, you know, holding her own with battling the greatest superhero of all time, in theory, something like that.
Yeah, DC has actually originated her twice. Back in the Golden Age in the 60s, well, I should say, like, neither time did she actually know Superman before coming to Earth. And the place where she's from, Argo City, is either just a different city than Superman's from, or is an entirely different planet. But in the 60s, Argo City was doomed somehow, and the planet blew up. But then a big chunk of it mysteriously escaped safely with an air bubble. But she actually was able to observe Superman from this big chunk of rock. And, you know, Taylor made her costume after his, and then flew to Earth. The second time around, which was just like 2008, she wasn't even familiar with Earth at all. So she couldn't speak English when she lands in Metropolis. She doesn't know any of the customs, and Batman ends up finding her. And, well, that's a really cool story. But the way that she comes to be a hero and a crime fighter is different every time that that DC has done it. But I forgot the original question.
Just whether they interacted at all. Like, could we have Superman and Supergirl playing together or sparring as kids? Would that make sense from that perspective?
You know, it could, but it would be totally divergent from the comic stories.
Okay, I think I'm okay with that.
The comic book that I read was something along the lines of both of them traveling through a wormhole, and she's actually older than he is.
Oh yeah, I've heard that one.
Yeah, like there's a few pages where she's actually holding him as a baby. She's taking care of her little cousin, and then a few pages later, he's there trying to explain to her who he is, and she doesn't believe him. He is evacuated first, and then she is evacuated shortly thereafter. But, you know, with the change in time, he's now older than she is on Earth.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Jerry, you had one comment as far as, you know, sort of the male versus female struggle on that as far as the villain goes. You want to touch on that? I know we've talked a little bit about villains, but this is a good point as well.
Well, I'd actually like to expound on the point that I had originally made a little bit, because I thought about it more and more over the last couple of days. But my original point that I brought up is just why we feel, or why Hollywood felt like the villain needed to be a female. And the more that I thought about that, the more that a little bit larger point came into my head, just in kind of a gender studies 101 type of moment in my car as I was driving around. And Supergirl as a movie seemed to just be written as we're going to take Superman and we're just going to reverse the genders of all the roles. And then we're just going to, you know, play it as normal. So the hero is a girl, the villain's a girl, the love interest is a guy, and so on and so on. And which I kind of touched on this point back in the casting episode, in how Ethan, as the quote unquote love interest, was just sort of dopey. And his only function in the movie was as a damsel in distress. He was there to be fawned over, or to fawn over, and then to get into predicaments that he needed rescuing from. That happened to be a bulldozer or whatever that thing was, that was remote control through witch powers and magic love potions and whatever else. But in the movie, it looked so stupid that this guy, hunky groundskeeper, would be doing this. And the more that I thought about it, the more I thought, if it was all back reversed to how a movie would normally play out, and that role was the female character and it was the male character saving her, that's just status quo. And we're programmed to assume that the female character, the love interest, is just there to look pretty, to get in trouble so that the male character can save her. But as soon as you flip it around, it just looks awkward and goofy and dopey. And I think that not only speaks to how dumb that whole thing is as a concept, but how ingrained we are as a Hollywood, or as a cinema viewing audience. And the 80s were horrible at this, but I don't think much has changed in that it's such a horrible stereotypical role that we have placed upon female actresses and roles that they can get. And here your role in this movie is just to be dopey and to get rescued.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this movie just basically attempted to flip everything around, and, you know, not without good reason. I think they did everything with an eye on female empowerment, you know, knowing that, you know, not only having your superhero be a girl, but then the antagonist, the villain, can, you know, can be a woman too. You know, she's really just she's ambitious, she's powerful, and that says something about about a woman's ability, you know, to move in society as well. But then having the Ethan character just kind of act helpless all the time was really ineffective. That, and having his constant, like, spellbound advances on Supergirl actually kind of work, seems a little bit rapey to me.
Oh, that was the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Supergirl, you're better than that.
Hear, hear.
But yeah. I think that's exactly right, Mark. That having the Ethan character, I think, was a complete accidental move by the writers of the movie that unintentionally just showed how horrible and dumb those gender roles are.
Yeah. That being said, I think it's totally possible to have a dude who needs saving, but still tries to act like a dude. I mean, you know, maybe he does try to fight back, but is, and you know, he's totally outclassed though, because, you know, well, which, but maybe he realizes it eventually. And, it's obvious that his male pride is hurt. I don't know, but I think it could be done better.
There was a movie that came to mind when I was driving around that had a similar role played in a much better way. And now I cannot remember what it is, but yeah, I agree. I think that there's a way to sort of reverse those roles that makes it more genuine on both sides. Just like I think that there's a way to make it reversed back again, where it's a male hero and a female love interest that brings some sense of credulity. No, that's the wrong word. Some sense of poise and high regard for the female character, and not just a fainting couch. I'm trapped in another bear trap. Come help me, type of role, but actually makes them more or less equal partners, even though one obviously is a superhero and one of them is not. But it's not just a, oh my God, I gotta go get her out of the swamp again. But actually, you know, has an actual legitimate relationship out of that, which they failed with on Ethan's part, because he was just so dopey.
Yeah, one that I thought of, which is probably another example of how not to do this, but there was a movie in, I think it was the late 90s, I think it was called Ever After, but it was it was kind of like a reboot of Cinderella, starring Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore, yeah, it's good.
It's I'll say it's not bad. the thing that stood out to me was essentially the climax of the film. You know, Drew Barrymore's character was essentially under attack, and you know, the Prince Charming sort of character was heroically riding in to save her. But then the twist is that when he gets there, you know, she doesn't need any more saving, because, you know, well, she took care of it. I think on the positive side, it at least didn't do the gender roles really, really poorly. But on the negative side, it was really anticlimactic.
Yeah, I think that's a good example. I like that.
I remember what I was thinking of as an example, and it's the movie Frozen.
Oh.
Where the female is the heroine, she's the lead, and the male is more or less, he's not even quite the love interest, because that actually gets turned on its head too, which is another great little twist to that movie. But through the story, they end up doing a lot more things in tandem, and not him getting stuck and her getting him out. They helped each other. It was more of a supporting relationship, and much more legitimate in that respect. But that was the one that came to mind.
Nice. That's a good discussion. Thanks. Next is kind of the tone of the movie and some filmmaking stuff. So we've talked a little bit in part one and touched on a little bit in other movies that we've discussed as well. But I think there's a general sense of feeling some fatigue from all the ultra dark, ultra realistic superhero movies of late. For example, the Dark Knight. And then I think the one that kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back was Man of Steel. I think, you know, Zack Snyder's style was certainly effective that way, and I actually rather enjoyed that. But the tone, Mark is typing, and Mark wants it to go dark. Mark likes his heroines dark. Like he likes his coffee. There we go. Cold and bitter. Nice. Fun with Google
Andy,
Docs.
Andy was typing that one, I should mention.
So, you know, I would like for this movie to maintain some of the sweetness that the original Superman movie had. You know, I don't think it has to be quite so aw shucksy, but I like the naivete of Superman, and I think that Supergirl, just as a character and some of her origin stuff, has serious potential for that. And Lee, you're going to talk a little bit about a coming of age in a little bit, but that's certainly a big part of that. But I want to shoot more for Iron Man tone versus the Dark Knight tone. That's what I would really like. And I want the world to feel lived in and believable that superheroes can exist. I don't want that to be a weird thing, but I don't want it to be ultra grimy, ultra gritty, super duper dark. So that's where I'm going to stand on the matter. What, Mark, I'm going to let you go last. What do you other lads think about that?
I will go. I'm going to side with Mark a little bit here because there's this version of the movie is so heavy on the saccharin and corn, which sounds disgusting.
Corn syrup.
Yeah. Good one. I think that the character, if this is really to be turned into a good movie, the character can certainly be naive and genuine and truly trying to do good in the world or having just being very innocent rather. But still, the movie can be very dark and, or not very dark, but, you know, realistic and have that be, you know, a rude awakening of sorts to the works of the villain and things like that. So I don't think we have to go like Taxi Driver dark here, but we can certainly go to make this a superhero movie that actually I think has a plot that holds people. I think personally, when I watch the Superman movies, I think they're all pretty corny and it turns me off right away with them. I want something that actually, where I feel like there is, a legitimate chance that the hero will not win, you know, like that's a conflict that to me is very interesting.
Yeah. I think you can have that very effectively without going super dark. That's what I would like to see.
I think the first Superman movie is good. You know, it's interesting enough. There's enough action. It's serious. And that's because of Richard Donner. Richard Lester was brought in to direct most of the second one and all of the third one, and the third one is terrible. So I think that's where a lot of the silliness of the Superman movies came from, was, you know, just this director who, in my opinion, was a little over his head. But I don't know if maybe that was the style they were trying to go with. Maybe they thought it was a good formula to follow for Supergirl. They learned pretty quickly that it isn't, because Superman 3 did not do very well. And as a result, this one didn't do very well either.
Would you say that the style was trying to draw from the style of the comic books? Maybe some of the older comic books? I don't know if... And I'm not a comic book aficionado at all. I've read probably four in my life. So I'm going to ask the other people on the panel who are much more knowledgeable, but... Would it be fair to say, or accurate to say, that the tone of some of these comic books, the older ones especially, maybe the more of the origin stories that had maybe more of an aw shucks or upright feel to them? You know, I think that if we're going back to like the 40s and 50s for some of these, am I right or am I completely off base?
I think that's accurate. I mean, the original Superman comics from the 50s were cheesy as hell. To call them naive, I think, is an understatement. Even
that's what I'm wondering. Then, if that was maybe a tone that they were trying to emulate in the movies to a certain degree, to be a little nostalgic, you know. But I don't know.
It's possible.
Just a theory.
The more modern day ones are a lot darker and a lot more violent. Actually,
that's true.
Yeah,
yeah. Mark, do you feel like you've had a chance to say your piece?
Nope.
Damn. Hold on. Before Mark goes crazy, I was just going to say, as far as the spectrum of Adam West to Zack Snyder, I would want this to go more Adam West, but not full Adam West.
Yeah.
So on the spectrum, leaning to that side, I think that one of the reasons why it comes off so weird in the Supergirl is that there's not any real sense of urgency from the villain. And a lot of the Superman movies, and especially all of the movies now, the world or the universe or the galaxy or whatever is in peril. There's something big that's going to destroy all of us. And what we had in Supergirl was a witch that was essentially just terrorizing this college town. And of course, that's not going to bring the same weight to it. And so by its very nature, I don't think that it can be as serious. So I think one of the ways that we would make it a little bit less campy is to up the ante a little bit in that regard. But I wouldn't want to go too far on that. I'd still want to keep that same type of vibe. Like Andy said, maybe not so much saccharin and corn syrup, but more naivete, more wanting to do the truth, justice in the American way sort of thing, like Superman. And I'd also love to see a lot more of Superman's hand on the world, if that makes sense, even if he's not in the movie very much or at all. This is a universe where he inhabits, and we are people who are familiar with him, or the people in the movie are familiar with him. And so
yes.
seeing Supergirl, people are going to make the connection. And I think it would be clever, or it could be clever, to have a lot of parallels in how people react, even though she might not be doing things the same way or have the same knowledge of what Superman is and does as the world around her does. I think having that connection in the people that she's interacting with would be a clever way to add to that as well.
Yep, I agree with that. I think it should be a post-Superman world, but I don't want it to be a bleak post-Superman world.
Yep, no dark colors like Zack Snyder's.
Yeah.
Everything's dark blue.
Yeah. Yeah, the Zack Snyder Man of Steel I thought was maybe too bleak for Superman. It's very brooding, and that's none of the Superman stories that I know. But except for maybe some of those where he gets really really dark in alternate realities, but that's a different story. I don't know, what I would like to see out of our Supergirl, and the reason that I say I want it to go dark is that she is a different character with a different background than Superman. Superman is, he was a baby when he landed on Earth. He grew up an Earthling. When the world is in danger, well, of course, he wants to save it. I mean, this is his planet, in more senses than just that he's the most powerful one here. He feels a sense of ownership and a sense of obligation. Especially by the time that the comics really start, he's already in Metropolis. He's already established himself as a hero. And, the Supergirl that we see, especially in the more modern reboots by DC Comics, she was a teenager when she left Argo City, and when she lands on Earth, she really just kind of needs a place to live, and she's already a young adult basically, and is just trying to survive. I think her story has to be much more existential. This should be the story of a girl that needs to be convinced to be a hero. It's not to say that the scope of the peril needs to be global or galactic. It can simply be that, the people that she has come to love are now in danger. The city that she has come to love is now in danger. And she has to come to grips with the fact that she has power and she can do something about it. Yeah, in the stories that I really appreciate, she doesn't necessarily want to be a hero. And it might take some pretty drastic things in order to convince her. That's the kind of darkness that I would like to see, is it being really existential.
Yeah, I could see that. I like that.
Thank you.
Definitely.
You've convinced us all, Mark.
Yay. Good work.
Vote for me.
Nice. Lee, you had to, before we talk about some of the filmmaking stuff, you talked about the coming of age, which we've touched on a little bit. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and kind of the difference in those stories and what you would like to see in the remake of Supergirl?
Mark just kind of went over that.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I was going to say something earlier, but in the comic books, she's not very concerned with protecting human beings. Just because she's, in a foreign land, she doesn't know what to think of all of this. And I know that there's some collateral damage. I don't think she kills anybody, but, she's not so concerned with holding back because she happens to be stronger than everybody else. But I like, the idea of having her to learn all of this and, making that a central, like, theme throughout a remake, is essentially her growing up and having to realize all this stuff and understanding the value of human life. And I think doing something like that would, focusing on something like that would lead to, possibly a sequel.
And, even when she's, full on Supergirl and, the stories of her in the Justice League that DC tells, you know, she's still a teenager, you know, and she acts like a teenager doing her hero stuff. You know, she's not nearly as disciplined as Superman is, even though she's as powerful.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things that's great about her is that you take this, this almost godlike power, but then you put it in someone who's kind of unpredictable and someone who's a little bit of a thrill seeker.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lot more interesting.
There's a scene in one of the cartoons. It's called Superman Unbound. And, it's just like like an hour and 15 long, animated movie where Superman isn't there. And the opening scene, Supergirl is trying to save Lois Lane from being kidnapped, by these guys. And they're like, oh, Superman's not here. So that's when we move in. And Lois is like, oh, you didn't hear about the other one though, did you? And she's like, yeah, she's, you know, teenager, mad at the world, doesn't know her own strength. So she was like, you guys are in big trouble. She kind of sums up, you know, what we're talking about here.
Nice.
Good reference, Lee.
Yeah, I like it.
Thanks.
I just want to take a couple minutes, we're running a little long here, to talk about some of the filmmaking side of things. Lee, you had some comments about the special effects in the original, about how not good they were, which I very much agree and kind of where you'd like that to go. Do you want to talk a little bit about that too?
Yeah, I think, you know, in 1984, having using the same types of techniques that they used in the first Superman, which was 6 years earlier, you know, a lot of wire work and composite shots and that sort of thing. I think by 1984 was starting to look a little antiquated.
Yeah, it wasn't Ghostbusters for sure.
Yeah, it didn't work as well. So, I mean, I think, you know, if ever there were a superhero movie that would benefit from CGI, this would be it.
I think that the makers of this movie blew their budgets on helicopter shots and Peter O'Toole.
Yes.
And left nothing for special effects.
Yeah. I like it. You know, as much as I've sort of put down Man of Steel, that was an amazing comic book movie. That was like the epitome of what a comic book movie can be. I just didn't like it as a Superman movie very much, but yeah, the action scenes were like holy blankety blank amazing.
Yeah,
like the action was unreal.
I agree.
I would love to see, you know, something that intense, but again, just without all the darkness and grit to that. So yeah.
You know, the Christopher Nolan Batman movies did amazing action scenes as well without the benefit of CGI.
Yeah.
But I think that we just need, if we were going to go that route, which I don't think we can for a, you know, Supergirl movie, but it would just need a lot better directing and writing and editing than than the original Supergirl movie.
Yeah. Yep. In a big way. Agreed.
Big way.
All right. Well, I think that will wrap it up here for the second part of our discussion of Supergirl. Thanks for hanging with us. That was a lot of good, fun discussion. I dig that. If you'd like to find out more about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Mathis Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes from this episode and all other episodes of Remaker's Mark on the website. So you can find out information about the movies, actors, and actresses discussed here tonight. You can find us on both Twitter and Facebook at username MathIsHardNet. Our next episode will be released on September 8th, where we will be discussing Slapshot. So, gents, as always, thanks for hanging with me. That was a lot of fun and good chats. Until the next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.